message God's laid on his heart. I do appreciate his filling in this morning. I needed you. I needed your help. So, Jim, you come. I hope I left here. I thought took your Bible.
Okay, yeah. Trying to get organized. I spread all my stuff out here, and I forgot that all these other people had to come up and do their thing, and I got all my stuff scattered all over. So, anyway. Okay. Would you all take your Bibles and turn to Romans chapter 1? Romans chapter 1, we're going to be considering this morning verses 19 and 20. And as some of you know, that creation versus evolution has always been one of my favorite topics, if not the favorite. And the devil has been very, very effective in confusing people on this very issue. And even Christians, a lot of Christians, they don't know what to believe. Okay, there's some give and take there. And it's just confusing. And the devil's been very effective in undermining the scriptures regarding this, like the age of the earth. How old is it? We watch nature shows on TV and stuff like that. And it's always millions and billions of years and this, that, and the other. And so it's a very important topic. But it has he has used this more effectively to undermine the scriptures than anything else. And this morning, I'm passionate about this, and we're going to discuss this, and I'm going to run out of time. I mean, that's a given. So I'm just going to go ahead, and we're going to get started, and we're going to roll. So, to start off with, how many of you this morning would say, I believe that God exists and that he is real? How many would say that? Okay, pretty good show of hands, all right? What if one of your friends or somebody would come up to you and say, I know that you say there's a God, but how do you know that? Have you ever seen him? Have you ever touched him? You ever talk with him? You answer no to all of these questions. Then they say, then how in the world can you say that you know there's a God? How would you answer them? What would you say? You can ask them. I'm going to give you some points here. Hopefully this will help. Ask them. Consider your house. Do you think your house just made itself under its own power? They would have said, no, that's ridiculous. Somebody had to design it first. Architects had to lay out the blueprints of the structure, the walls, the ceiling, the roof, the basement. Then someone had to build it. You know, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, bricklayers. Somebody had to build it. Everybody would agree that it's crazy to think that any building could build itself on its own accord. I think that's pretty well a given, folks. Then you ask them, look around at nature. What can you see? They would answer, I see trees and plants, animals, the earth. I can see the moon, the sun, and the stars. And then you ask them, how do you think they got there? How did it all start? They're probably going to answer from the Big Bang. There are two trains of thought on how this all began. There is evolution and there's creation. And so let's discuss the first train of thought, evolution. They say it's based on the Big Bang theory. And we hear about it, we're bombarded with it, okay? It all began as a hot and infinitely dense dot, only a few millimeters wide, just a fraction of an inch wide. It all started out with this tiny little sphere. 13.7 billion years ago, and I looked this up on the internet to get the latest information, to be sure I'm accurate as I'm stating their case here. 13.7 billion years ago, it exploded in a massive explosion. All matter that we see today came from this explosion. It all came from this tiny little sphere, fraction of an inch in diameter. All matter that we see today came from this explosion. All matter was molten because of the heat generated from this explosion. But over millions of years, it began cooling down. Eventually, as cooling continued, a crust began forming on the surface. Evolutionists have several ideas about how life began. Now, they don't all agree on all these different things, but I'm pointing out the main, you know, the main theme that they talk about. Evolutionists have several ideas on how life began, but admit they have no real answers. Let's use one of the main ideas. Okay? Again, after millions of years, there was an acid rain. There was some, you know, that came and dissolved some of the crust of the earth, forming a slurry or a mud-like soup. About 3.5 to 4 billion years ago, some phenomenon occurred, like a lightning bolt or something, that struck this soupy slurry, and it formed an amino acid. And amino acids are necessary because it's a building block for life. We're trying to figure out how did life begin, all right? From this slurry and this lightning bolt, life first began as a primitive one-celled bacteria. From this simple beginning, life began to evolve into more and more advanced forms of life. Bacteria to amoebas, to worms, to fish, to amphibians, and a frog is an amphibian, okay? Then on to reptiles and to dinosaurs, to birds, to mammals, to apes, to chimpanzees, and on to man. And they say that the chimpanzee has got the closest of any other animal to humans. Their DNA is closer than anything else. So, this is based on a principle of survival of the fittest, which means the strong survive and the weak die. The strong have continued to survive and advance upward until we have what we have today. This process of evolution is still going on and advancing today. We're still evolving. Evolution is a very slow process, taking thousands or millions of years to happen, and this is why we can't observe the changes, because they take place so slowly. It's such a gradual thing. Okay, that's in a nutshell the evolutionist theory on all of this. Now let's take a look at the second train of thought, which is creation. According to the genealogies given in the Bible, a little over 6,000 years ago, God created the heavens and the earth. The word create means to make something out of nothing. By the way, that word is abused terribly in this day and age, create. Nothing existed before that time except God himself. In six literal 24-hour days, God spoke, and in so doing, he created or brought into existence the entire universe. He said, let there be light, and it was so. He said, let the dry land appear, and it was so. On the seventh day, God rested. Creation was finished, and since that time, nothing else has been or will be created. It's over. So there's quite a bit of difference between these two different trains of thought, isn't there? Quite a bit of difference. So back to the original question. How can you say you know there is a God? And let's turn to Romans. Okay, we're already there. Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. Excuse me. Okay, here's the verses. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, or made known, shown, revealed. That's what the word manifest means. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him, from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Okay, very important verses. It's what this is saying, that God has showed us that he exists if we just open our eyes and ponder the world in which we live. His existence and power can be proven by the things that are made. And folks, that's what we're going to be talking about today, what we can see. And what, you know, anyway, what we can see. This is referred to the things that we can observe in nature. The things we see in nature that are all around us. Folks, it is all around us. We can't get away from it. We need oxygen, and plants need carbon dioxide in order to live. Without them, we both will die. We inhale oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide, allowing the plants to live. Trees, grass, and plants take in the carbon dioxide we exhale, and through a process called photosynthesis, uses sunlight to change carbon dioxide back into oxygen, which allows us to live. Folks, we are completely dependent on each other for survival. Rain from clouds falls to the earth. This gives the necessary moisture for all plants and animals to survive. The rain supplies the moisture needed for plants and the crops necessary for our food supply. The overflow runs into lakes, streams, and rivers. The streams and rivers constantly flow into the oceans. Then water defies gravity and is lifted up from the lakes and oceans thousands of feet into the air. And there it is suspended, just suspended, and collected in the clouds. Then the clouds float over the land and rain again is dropped back to the earth. That cycle goes on and on. It is necessary for life. A cow eats grass and converts that grass into milk and meat to sustain human life. Think what's involved when a caterpillar makes a cocoon and soon turns into a butterfly. Think of that. Can you imagine the evolutionary process figuring this out? There's a Bombardier beetle that produces chemicals which mix perfectly and at the right moment explode in the face of his enemy. But this explosion does not occur prematurely, and it does not harm the beetle. A dead oak tree falls to the earth. This provides shelter and nutrients for animals and insects and organisms. They need that to survive. This decay provides nutrients and soil in the soil to support a newly fallen acorn that will eventually grow up and turn into another tall oak tree. A honeybee has been out alone and finds a new source of flowers with plenty of nectar. It flies back to the hive and does a special dance while the other bees watch. In this special dance, all the other bees receive the exact directions to follow of how to go to the new food source. Without the presence of the dancing bee, the others can leave the hive and go directly to the right spot using only the directions received from this dancing bee. As they go, they carry pollen caught in the hair of their legs collected from previous flowers. This in turn pollinates these new flowers so they can grow as the honeybee is collecting the nectar. Isn't that amazing? At what stage of the evolutionary process do you think that evolution figured out that a honeybee needed hairy legs to collect pollen more efficiently? Can you see the fine-tuned balance in nature? A mother emperor penguin is shifting her egg on the top of the father penguin's feet in the bitter cold of Antarctica so she can go to the ocean for food. These penguins are all huddled on a block of solid ice. Both the father and the mother have a special fold in their stomachs that will cover the egg to keep it warm. In the 40-degree weather and below and howling winds, the egg will freeze in seconds. Without any food for himself, he must keep the egg warm under this fold in his stomach for the 30 to 65 days it takes for the mother to return with food for the baby. After the newborn is hatched and fed, the mother takes over to keep the newly hatched penguin warm, and the father is free to go to the ocean and find food for himself. What told those penguins that they needed a special fold in their stomachs so the penguins could continue to propagate? Do you suppose the evolutionary process could figure this out and produce those folds in their stomachs in time before the egg would freeze? It would probably take thousands of years for this fold to evolve. Frozen penguin eggs don't hatch, folks. However, God provided these penguins with that fold, plus everything else needed to survive the bitter cold in the Antarctic on the sixth day of creation. They had that from the get-go, folks. As a result, penguins still thrive today. Consider the human heart. It's the size of your fist and weighs less than a pound. Your heart pumps 1,800 to 2,000 gallons of blood a day. Most last 60 to 80 years without needing repair. It has pumped 48 million gallons of blood by the time a person reaches 70 years old. Try to buy a pump today that will give that kind of service. The seed from a man and a woman are joined together in a single cell that has just began a new human life. A baby has just been conceived. This cell begins to grow and form inside the mother's womb. The mother's body provides protection and supplies all the needs for the proper development of this little baby for 9 months. The baby received DNA from both of its parents, but the baby's DNA is different from both of its parents because this is a different person. At the proper time, this baby is born. All of the baby's organs are there and ready to function in complete harmony with each other, even though the lungs, kidneys, intestinal tract, and liver have never been used or tried. This is because mommy has been supplying this function up until this moment, but now mommy's supply isn't there anymore. As soon as this baby receives that little slap, all of these untested organs have got to begin functioning immediately in complete harmony with each other, or the baby will die without immediate medical attention. The mother's milk gives the exact nutrients necessary to give this newborn what it needs until able to eat more solid food. If all goes well, this newborn will eventually grow up and have children of his or her own. The heavenly bodies are hurtling through space, traveling several thousand miles an hour, suspended by nothing. The earth is 25,000 miles in circumference and hangs in empty space. It spins at 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, and with such perfect precision so that time can be kept to the split second. And at the same time, it hurtles through space around the sun in an orbit of 580 million miles at 1,000 miles a minute. The sun rises right on time every morning, year after year. This error here is intended, folks. The sun does not rise. We rotate. It's perfect every morning. Orbits and positions are so precise that man can calculate their trajectories accurately. So accurate that we're able to send a man to the moon and land a satellite on Pluto, on Mars. We have been able to explore the surfaces of Pluto and beyond. Ask the evolutionists to explain how such precise orbits and revolutions could be possible from the great explosion of the Big Bang. Yet evolutionists send satellites out to examine asteroids and other heavenly bodies which are untainted by man, trying to figure out clues as to how our universe began. I'll give them a clue. Read Genesis chapter 1 and 2. For things to work as the evolutionists say it did, it would be more probable to disassemble 1,000 watches completely and put the parts in a bag, then get in an airplane and from 10,000 feet in the air dump all the parts out, then go back and find all 1,000 watches ticking perfectly and showing the right time. Isn't it amazing that when that tiny sphere exploded in the Big Bang, that the minuscule portion that formed Earth knew that we would need vast reserves of water, coal, natural gas, and oil to sustain our present lifestyle? Either God or evolution was planning ahead. Have you ever been to the zoo and saw those monkeys using those real long tails like hands to swing across their cage? You know, they use their hands that are going across the top of the cage, they're swinging, they're grabbing it with their tail, and they're using their tail to swing up. And I mean, I think most of us have probably seen that. And you're looking at that and say, wow, they don't have to look where they're grabbing with their tail, they just know where to grab. Evolutionists tell us that our tailbone is a vestigial organ. This means that it had a use millions of years ago because it is at the point to where our tail was attached. But as we evolved over the millennia, we began walking upright and ceased swinging through the trees. Since we don't use or need our tails anymore, they simply withered away due to lack of use and they do not exist today. They say our tailbone is a present-day reminder of what we used to be like. But think about it. How handy would a tail be? If you had 2 bags of groceries in your arms, you could use your tail to open the door. Guys, have you ever been underneath your car holding a wrench in one hand and the trouble light in the other and needed a third hand? How handy would your tail be to hold a light? Women could unload the dishwasher with both hands while stirring the soup with their tail. I mean, this would be great, okay? So, let's join in on the evolutionist theory in order to improve ourselves, all right? And let's do exactly what they say has been going on over millions of years and still going on today. Let's decide to evolve and grow a tail. It'd be handy, all right? We could use a third hand, right? All right? Now, I realize it's going to take thousands of years to complete, but we've got to start somewhere, so let's take that first step. Okay, can we all agree that we need a tail? Everybody do one of these. Okay, we're joining the evolutionists now. Do one of these. This means yes in McPherson. Okay, all right. So who's going to tell me what is the first step? Okay, let's agree that we need to grow a tail. Okay, we got that taken care of. So who will tell me what is the first step we need to take? What do we need to do to get started growing a tail?
Wear pants with a hole in them.
Okay. So again, just try to, you know, but this is what they say has been happening, so it'd be a good thing. It seems ridiculous, doesn't it? And yet the vast majority of people have bought into this kind of thinking. What if an amoeba wanted feathers or lungs? How would it start? How would it begin? Once there was a one thing, and it said to itself, I want to be two, and away they went. Sounds a little strange, doesn't it? It makes you wonder, at what stage of the evolutionary process did it decide to develop a brain? And how did it go about making it? Glob of mud that evolved upwards, okay? What about gender? As this glob of mud evolved into higher forms of life, I wonder at what stage of evolution it said to another, how about me becoming a man and you become a woman? How many times would they fail before getting it right? If it didn't work as they tried to develop this, they would die, and there'd be no new genetic code to pass on as a stepping stone. Male and female would not exist today. Just a thought. God said he made a male and female from the beginning. God said he created plants and animals in a state of maturity. In the Bible, in maturity. God didn't say to Adam and Eve as newborn babies, hurry up and go find a baby bottle before you starve. Didn't happen. Okay? Instead, he told Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. They were mature adults. Everything was created in a state of maturity. The plants, as you read the account in Genesis 1 and 2, the plants and trees already had fruit with its seed in itself. The answer to what came first, the chicken or the egg, is simple. The chicken did, because on the sixth day of creation, the Bible says, God made all the land animals. He didn't create an egg. Bear along with me, and let me give you a fictitious example to make a point. Now, folks, this did not happen, okay? But for the moment, let's assume that there were two scientists watching as God was creating the earth. Two scientists watching. They spotted a very impressive looking rock, and they said, stand back, God. We want to test this rock and see how old it is. God says to them, the rock is only 5 minutes old. I just created it. They say, no, God, we have our scientific instruments here and we won't take your word for it. We want to test it. So God says, okay, go ahead and test it. When finished, they exclaim, this rock is millions of years old. And God says, no, it's not. It's only 5 minutes old. I just created it. And they say, no, God, you are wrong. Our testing is very accurate, and we have just proven that you are wrong. And folks, this philosophy is still going on today. God made man with intelligence, with the ability to communicate from the beginning. In fact, the Bible says in Genesis 2:19 that Adam named all of the animals. That takes intelligence, folks. There was no such thing as the intelligent caveman type that could only grunt instead of talk. From the very first moment, man has been able to speak and communicate. Man has always had intelligence. This ape man thing is a farce. The Bible tells us that God has created plants and animals so that they can only reproduce after its kind. Kind in God's vocabulary is close to species in man's vocabulary. The two are very close. Man got species pretty close. It's what this means is that fish have fish, birds have birds, whales have whales, dogs have dogs, cats have cats, peach trees produce peach trees, cherry trees produce cherry trees, chickens have chickens, monkeys have monkeys, and humans have humans, after its own kind. In the case of plants, they have their seed within itself. Its seed falls to the earth and produces another plant or tree after its kind. God has started it off that way from the beginning. So if it can reproduce, it is of the same kind. Different kinds cannot reproduce. Dogs can't reproduce with cats, and an oak branch won't survive that is grafted into a peach tree. It won't work. But what about variations? Genetic code can change within certain boundaries given by God. There's a certain amount of change can take place, okay, within the kind, okay? There was probably one pair of the dog kind on the ark. From this pair came wolves, coyotes, dogs, hyenas. Everything that is of the dog kind came from that one pair, probably. But today there are all different varieties of dogs. Okay, we have big dogs, little dogs, long hair, short hair, upright ears, floppy ears, long nose, pug nose, German shepherds, cocker spaniels, golden retrievers, labradors, poodles, great danes, and weenie dogs. All kinds of dogs. Okay, we can use selective breeding to get dominant traits that we want in both plants and animals. We can use selective breeding to do that. Today, we even use artificial insemination to get the perfect type of animal. Examples of that are people that breed show dogs. You know, you want to get the perfect animal, and you select the male and the female from that have the qualities you're looking for. State Fair Grand Champions, selective breeding, okay, are trying to get the fastest racehorse. You know, we pick and select, you know, selective breeding. You are not changing from one kind to another kind. It is still of the same kind. It is still of the dog, the cat, or the horse kind. You're not going from one to the other. You're not switching kinds. You're not going to get a half dog, half cat. Doesn't happen. This goes completely against the teachings of evolution, which teaches that animals evolved from one kind to another kind as they advance upward. Completely contrary to it. And folks, look around. Look and see what you can see. It backs up the Bible. God has restricted it. We went to the Kansas State Fair and saw fully grown horses, smaller than our golden retriever. But it was still of the horse kind. It was still a horse. It wasn't anything different. It was a horse. I mean, you wanted to move the horse, they just pick the thing up, pick it up and carry it and set it down. Probably didn't weigh over 30 pounds. I couldn't believe it. I never seen anything like that before in all my life. But through selective breeding stuff, we can do those things. But folks, again, it is still a horse. It is still of the horse kind. You can't change that. By the way, there's only one kind of humans. So how are fossils formed? If an animal dies today and is left alone, it will be scavenged by some other animals or to rot and decay. It eventually will decay, turn back to dust, and all will be lost. For a fossil to form, it must be buried suddenly and out of the presence of the elements to avoid this decay and scavenging. It then needs to be left undisturbed and allowed a lot of time for the fossilization to take place for it to turn into rock. As we know, fossils are found all over the earth. Many fossils of marine life are found high up on mountains as well as everywhere else. Can anyone tell us of any event where something like this could have taken place? Anybody? The flood, right, okay. The flood during Noah's day, found in Genesis 7. The fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. And there'd be volcanoes all over the planet, all over the earth, okay. The flood was global, over the entire earth, and it said the water was 15 cubits, or 22 feet above the highest mountains. That's how much water there was. Massive erosion took place as water rushed upward from inside the earth and downward from the sky. Then again, as the water recedes, in fact, we've seen floods and stuff take place in our day. A lot of times there's more destruction as the water goes out, as it carries all these trees and limbs and houses and cars and everything, as it goes back out again, and it just cleans everything out. All right. We have seen the erosion a local flood can cause. I mean, wiping out bridges and roads and stuff like that. Try to imagine what a complete global flood would do. The Grand Canyon was cut by the flood, not the Colorado River. Plants and animals were buried suddenly in mud to eventually form fossils. That's where our fossils came from, being buried suddenly. Okay? There's no time to be scavenged or to rot or decay. Some fossils are fish in the midst of swallowing a smaller fish, with a smaller fish half in and half out of the larger fish's mouth. I've seen pictures of those fossils. Okay? Fish half in, half out. I mean, like this happened. He got buried suddenly. This goes on to show the suddenness of this disaster. There were probably aftershocks and volcanoes going on for centuries after this global catastrophe. You know, we have earthquakes today, and there's always aftershocks. We see that in the news every day. This caused more erosion, forming canyons and carving a landscape, causing more plants and animals to be covered and fossilized. That's where our fossils came from. There are fossils of dinosaurs and man's footprints in the same fossil. How can evolutionists explain that? I've seen pictures of it. They simply turn their heads. Here's a good question for the evolutionist. Where are the missing links that are necessary for the evolutionary process to work? First of all, what is a link? If plants and animals evolved from one kind to another kind over millions of years, as the evolutionists say they did, there should be thousands of fossils showing a step-by-step process, a link. As, for example, as a reptile was gradually changing or evolving into a bird. So we have a reptile here, we have a bird over here, and there should be, as this thing was slowly evolving, over all these should be very steps as it was just making this gradual change, you know, going from one to the other. And there should be fossils showing this. All right? Since we still have reptiles today and we still have birds today, evolutionists would have to assume that some evolved and some did not. Why? Also, since we still have both today, there should be thousands of them living today in those in-between stages, since evolution is supposed to be an ongoing process. So since we still have both today, we should still have examples living today on planet Earth showing, you know, these gradual changes. Where are they? They don't exist. However, no such fossils can be found in any of the major life forms. There are no fossils of 1/4, 3/4 reptile / birds found. You know, quarter reptile, 3/4 bird. No such thing. And there's no 1/4, 3/4 reptile birds flying or running around today either. A fossil of a frog looks like a living frog today. They look the same. The fossil of a bird still looks like a living bird today. There's no in-betweens found. So why can't these missing links of animals gradually evolving from one kind to another be found? If apes evolved into humans, why do we still have apes today? If this is still an ongoing evolving process, we should be able to see millions of part ape, part humans showing the gradual changes from apes to humans running around today. Where are they? Look around. Can anybody tell me why these links are not found as they should be? Anybody? It didn't happen that way, folks. It did not happen then. It's not happening today. This whole thing is an absolute joke. It's a farce. It didn't happen that way in the first place. This biblical truth is confirmed by scientific observations made on plants and animals, whether living, dead, or fossilized. It proves the Bible. It doesn't prove evolution. Creationists and evolutionists look at the same fossils, but they come to different conclusions. The question of where are the missing links cannot be answered by the evolutionists. They do not have an answer. and yet they stick to their guns. Other things to think about that we did not have time to discuss. Folks, I have chopped this lesson in half and more. Consider other things that we don't have time to discuss today. How would evolution come up with intelligence? How would evolutionists come up with something such as eyesight, the senses of smell, hearing, touch, taste, or DNA? How could it figure that out? How about something as intricate as a human brain? Isn't it amazing how that what started out as a glob of mud developed the intelligence to figure all of this out as time went on? It didn't happen. The list of other examples of intelligent design in nature could fill a library. Folks, there's examples of it all over. I've touched on a handful. So, why do we have this idea of evolution today? This question can best be answered by an evolutionist. I'm going to let them answer that question. Why does it exist today? Evolutionist Sir Arthur Keith summarizes the evolution doctrine as follows, and I'm going to quote him. Evolution is unproven and unprovable. We believe it, however, because the only alternative is an act of creation by a God, and that is unthinkable. Unquote. I'm going to read that again. This is why we have evolution, folks. They do not want to believe in God, in a God, the God. And again, there's different rules that they call evolution science. And there are certain rules that has got to apply to qualify to be classified as science. And there's two main rules they have. Number one, it's got to be observable. And number two, it's got to be repeatable. And folks, evolution fails on science on both these counts because they have not observed it and they can't reproduce it. And yet they still call it science. You figure that one out. I was just going to read this again. Evolution is unprovable and unproven and unprovable. We believe it, however, because the only alternative is an act of creation by a God, and that is unthinkable. In other words, that's the only thing we got to cling to. We refuse to accept the fact that there is God. We refuse that. And so evolution is the best thing we've got. Folks, we should never put a question mark where God puts a period. 2 Peter 3:13. Don't go there. Okay. But you can look it up on your own. I'd encourage you. 2 Peter 3, verses 3 to 13. It talks about people who are scoffers of the Bible. And to put those verses in a nutshell, people are scoffing. They're talking about the return of Christ. They're saying, you know, since the creation of time, Christ has not returned. And if he hadn't come by now, he's not coming at all. And they're joking and they're laughing and they're making a mockery of the Bible because Christ hasn't returned. You guys keep looking for Christ. He isn't here and he's not coming. It's all a bunch of baloney. All right. And in the middle of those verses, in 2 Peter 3:8, it says that they are willingly ignorant. Willingly ignorant. Folks, those are God's words. Those are not my words. That's God's word. They are willingly ignorant. Think about that. Okay? Willingly ignorant means they choose to be ignorant on purpose. Folks, the evolutionists can see the things that I'm talking about this morning, and just like this Sir Arthur, whatever he was, Arthur Keith, he chooses to be ignorant. They can look at the world they live in, they can see the undeniable intelligent design that surrounds them everywhere. They should understand that there is no way all of this could have happened by chance. Yet they're willing to ignore the obvious and believe the devil's lie. That is the devil's lie, evolution is, okay? Man steps in with all of his intellect and brilliance and says, no, God, you're wrong, your Bible is wrong, and I can prove it. And they've got all their tests, their stuff, to the measure the age of the rocks and all this stuff. It's like these two scientists watching God as he's creating. They're saying, I'm placing my intelligence and my opinion above yours, God. Today, it's not politically correct to talk about intelligent design. But as we've seen, it's all around us. We can't get away from it. We cannot honestly deny it. God has shown us that he exists, revealed through his design, through creation. Folks, there is a perfect design in creation. Well, I shouldn't say perfect. God's placed the earth under a curse, okay? So it was perfect when he started, but anyway, he's still running things. Man needs to open his eyes and mind and accept reality. The truth is that God does exist and that he created everything and he has recorded it to us in his word, the Bible. He's recorded it for us. The truth is that God does, okay, I read that. His credentials can stand on their own. They're displayed all around us. If one opens his mind, he cannot fail to see the intelligent design that is prominently displayed. If there's intelligent design, then there has to be an intelligent designer. His name is Jesus Christ. Man hasn't proven a single thing with evolution, except that it doesn't match up with the reality that we can look at and see. At the beginning of this discussion, everybody said it would be completely foolish to think that a building can be built on its own accord. That's crazy. Yet highly intelligent people are willing to accept the devil's lie that this all started out as a big bang and a piece of mud and under its own power has produced what we see today. Folks, at the end of that verse 20, Romans chapter 1, verse 20, it ends saying, and God is saying, they are without excuse. What does that mean? That means exactly what it says. God says, they are without excuse. It means God will hold them accountable for their unbelief. God takes this matter very seriously, and so should we. Everybody living on the face of this earth has experienced God. Whether you knew it or not, you've experienced God. Whether you accept it or not, you've experienced God. Everybody living, okay, his wisdom, his power, his design of the universe. Though they have not recognized him, he has been there. Through what God has shown us through his creation, they should recognize and admit that he exists. His eternal power and Godhead have been revealed. I mean, folks, look at the design. Been revealed. We have said it's foolish to think that a building could build itself, but that is just a drop in the bucket as we consider the design that exists in the entire universe. We can know that this universe just didn't come into being by random choice, and that's what evolution is all about. God is saying, with all this evidence, you're without excuse. The intelligent designer gave detail to every facet of this universe. All we have to do is open our eyes, look around, and see all the design of nature that is clearly displayed around us. An intelligent designer had to do it. This designer's name is Jesus Christ. If they refuse to accept this, then God says they are without excuse. And God will then place them on his list of those who are willingly ignorant. Folks, my time is up. Anyway, I hope that this whole thing started out. How can you say you know there's a God? Folks, the evidence is real. It's all around us. And hopefully, this will give you some ammunition. And again, I watch a lot of nature shows. I love to watch them because as they're talking about nature, they are talking about creation. They're showing creation. Now, they don't call it that. They don't name it that. But as they're saying all this evolution, how things evolved and how wonderful it is and how well it fits together, I'm sitting there praising God. Hey, look at God's creation, how wonderful. These guys are explaining it. They're explaining creation. And yet their hearts are in the wrong place. I'm finished. Pastor, let you come up and close things out here. Thank you for bearing with me. And thank you, Pastor, for giving me the opportunity to bring this. Thank you.